Hello and welcome to the Majlis Radio Free Republic of Liberty's current affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Radio Free Republic of Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. We thought we should start the first show of the year with the most important topic of the day, which is the ongoing impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, which has changed the world the way we know it. Now, as the world grappling with the second wave, with deadlier and more infectious variants of the virus emerging in numerous countries, how has the pandemic changed Central Asia, and what changed in the way in which Central Asian authorities are trying to cope with the situation? And also, what are the plans for what might be on the horizon in terms of the continued impact of the virus and about the possible solution, the vaccine, and plans to obtain them and vaccinate people? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Dr. Ermek Ismailov, General Surgeon and Urgent Care Therapist at the State Institution Clinical Hospital of the Administrative Department of the President of the Kyrgyz Republic, Dr. Gauhar Merganova, Public Health Specialist, joining us from Kazakhstan, Barno Anwar, a Senior Journalist with Radio Free Republic of Liberty's Uzbek Service, locally known as the Ozotlik, and Bruce Panier, the Editor of Radio Free Republic of Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Bruce is joining us from Prague. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today. So let's start with the medical professionals who are on the ground and dealing with the situation on day-by-day cases. Dr. Gauhar, tell us about how things are today in Kazakhstan, in the front lines in terms of the COVID-19.
So currently in Kazakhstan, we have over 160 cases of COVID infection.
160 cases or 160,000?
160,000, yeah. Okay. This is total registered number of cases. But according to official statistics, we have about 11,000 active cases. And officially, we have relatively low number of death cases. It's more than 2,000 cases, 2,262 cases. But I have to say that in Kazakhstan, we developed the system to monitor and control and kind of evaluate the epidemics in the country. Because in the beginning, it was really hard to understand, you know, the spread and the rate of infection in different regions of Kazakhstan. And currently, we have a special system. So we collect data from different regions, and we classify these regions according to rate of infection, reproductive number. And Ministry of Healthcare created matrix to visualize the spread of the epidemics over the different regions of Kazakhstan. So we have free zones that are helping to population to understand where infection is growing and where infection is stable. And it's like red, yellow, and green zones. Currently, we have only one region in red zone, which is Atyrau Oblast. Two biggest cities of Kazakhstan, Almaty and Nur-Sultan, they're in yellow zones, but kind of fluctuating closer to red zone, but then next day back to yellow zone. But these two cities are the biggest cities of Kazakhstan and kind of reflects the situation of the whole country.
Okay. I mean, the numbers you have been sharing, Gauhar, I guess these are coming from the official books, right?
Yes, those are official numbers.
And there has been lots of questions about the way officials are reporting those cases. Has this been fixed? If you look into those numbers from a health professional's perspective, do you really rely on those numbers?
This infection is really hard to kind of to catch all numbers correctly, because we know that 20% of infection has no symptoms. You know, people has no symptoms. So they never go to the doctor and get tested. And then, you know, about 80% of people have very small, you know, manifestation of the disease. They also might, you know, not get to the doctors, to health professionals to get tested. So tests are only done for those who are planning to travel or, you know, work in special areas like doctors or people who work with risk populations, they require to be tested. those people are mostly tested. So to be honest, you know, I don't think those numbers reflect the real situation with the infection in any country, because it's really, you know, it's the nature of the infection.
Right.
But what is good, I think those people who are interested in testing and have indication to be tested, those who have severe symptoms or, you know, go to their primary healthcare facilities to get tested, they can get this test for free.
Right. So, Dr. Ermek, in Kyrgyzstan, how things are in the front lines there? I mean, how the trend has been lately when compared to the, let's say, last year in August, September, or October? Mm-hmm.
If we compare the situation which we have in August or July, at the moment the situation is better, because today we registered 144 cases in COVID infection. It shows that the maybe second wave are going to decrease at the moment. And
So Dr. Ermek, you think second wave is already there?
I think in our country, I think the second wave is, yes, going down. So the situation about how many cases it was in November and October, I think it's the second wave in our country is going to down, yes.
Mm-hmm.
If we compare, of course, with first wave.
That's interesting. So what do you relate this light effect to in the second wave? I mean, the second wave has been really tough in many places. Just wondering, has there been any significant change the way authorities have been responding at this time?
Yeah, our government are trying to add new beds for COVID infection patients. For example, when we have one first wave in August, we not allow beds for patients. At the moment, we have more than 1,000 beds for COVID infections. That's why at the moment, I think we can help for people with COVID infection more better than first wave in July.
Mm. What about the testing equipment? Are there enough tests available in the country? Whoever, you know, wants to take it, they just go and drive through and take the test. Are the cases reported properly? When we were talking about this like a couple of months back, I mean, there were lots of questions about even in the designation of what makes a corona case. I mean, there were lots of confusion. I mean, has Kyrgyzstan solved all of these things over the past couple of months? I mean, is it properly reported now? Are there enough testing available for people?
I think at the moment the testing is enough, because we know that private laboratory at the moment can also testing with COVID infection patients. For example, in the first way we compare, only government hospitals can test with COVID patients. At the moment, private laboratory also can testing, and that's why I think it's enough to testing. About a second question, I think Kyrgyzstan is the first country who added the two diagnoses in one. For our health minister said that COVID-19 and pneumonia is the same disease.
Apparently, in Kazakhstan, they are registering it as two different infectious disease. Okay, talking about the numbers, you know, I'm not sure about the reporting procedures still in lots of places in Central Asia, and of course, lots of places outside of Central Asia. If we look into Uzbekistan, for instance, Barno, the total confirmed cases today stands at 77,350 cases, and 75,650 of them are already recovered, which means there are only 1,700 active cases in Uzbekistan for the population of 30 plus million. I have two questions there for you, Barno.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of these numbers? And the second, how you report about this as a journalist?
Yeah, it's interesting question, Tahir, and thank you for inviting. That was the big dilemma for us while covering this issue during the pandemic, because as you may know, right beginning of the pandemic, there was a change in the processual code of Uzbekistan, administrative code of Uzbekistan, for the wrong numbers, which may cause disorder among the populations, or which may insult somebody, can be punished up to 10 years of jail. That was the preventing the media to freely cover this issue. So we had a big deals with the numbers, because the 77,350 right now, this is official record, but health ministry says that they are taking into record only the cases with the positive coronavirus test result. And at the beginning, testing kits were not enough. And from the starting of 5th of July, patients with light COVID symptoms were allowed to stay at home, who didn't have a test or were not provided test for free, and which means they were not in the official record as infected cases. And as Uzbekistan health worker believes, minimum up to 3 times, some believes maybe 5 times more infected cases actually in the country than official record. Mm. So if official record 77,000 plus, then which means 5 times more, it's a really big number. But this is not official. This is what health workers believes. Mm. And same issue with the numbers of death cases. As you mentioned, official figure is like 615, right, from the 5th of January. Mm. But I can say shortly that we have done an investigation in October. Our mobile and citizen reporters helped us, and they learned the death cases in 10 cemeteries in 4 big regions. And together we found out at least 1,000 death cases with the symptoms of COVID-19. Mm. And I would like to mention that this is not officially confirmed number. It comes from cemetery workers and imams who lead the funeral process, and it comes from the relatives, and the relatives at the same time relying to the hospitals and the doctors. That's why they're sure that their loved ones died from coronavirus. Mm. So again, health ministry said in answer to those claims of the deaths that they are not counting the death cases, which is strange in minimum, because when it's officially confirmed by them that many patients at home with no test, and there were time where these patients at home were very limited healthcare assistance. As healthcare workers believes, the first big wave of COVID pandemic in Uzbekistan was during the July, August, right, September, and October. And that time of period of appeals from our listeners, hmm, and the letters from health workers and our sources within the governmental officials were saying that no rooms in hospitals, lack of medical workers, supplies, and that period of time the death cases were unofficially rising, but again official record was pretty stable. It was like 2 deaths in the morning report, official report, mm, and the 2 cases in the evening report. Mm. It was really strange. That's why, as we believe that official numbers till now are not reliable, but still we cannot say anything about this clearly since we don't have any official confirmation. It's really a dilemma.
Yeah. So in terms of like reporting this, I mean, how you report it when as a journalist, and how you deal with this dilemma?
For example, as I said, we had an investigation. Mm. So in this investigation, for example, we have talked to more than 15 cemetery workers, right, yeah, more than 10 imams and relatives. And those relatives, and we usually talk to medical workers. And as I said, since there was a punishment in the administrative code, as doctor says to our and health workers saying to our that to us that they were like asked, demanded from their authorities that they shouldn't have to give any information about the numbers, statistics, without the permission of health ministry. So if they can't do this, and they were calling to us and providing that unofficial information and numbers, but according to their practice, and they were giving us numbers. So we were relying mostly on official sources. Mm. In the current situation, in the current place, in within the time limit, for example, as I said, approximately 1,000 death cases in four regions and in 10 cemeteries, right, during 2 or 1.5 weeks of period.
Right.
That was how we could talk about this.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah, this was really hard.
Yeah, that's tough, Berno. Thank you. One more question on testing, Berno. So how is testing working out in Uzbekistan? Are they easily available? Can anyone get access to it when in the way they like it?
It's really easy right now. It's okay, available, but it's available for the cost of money. Mm. Because at the beginning, as we remember, it was a big issue like in many other countries. Lack of testing kits, medical workers, laboratories, lines, and so on. But then testing became available for private sector, and it's like from 300,000 soms. It's about the $30 price. So result will be done in 6 hours. But for free, there are for free option for testing. But it is still a bit complicated because patient needs to be experiencing 38.5 or higher fever for like minimum 1 or 2 days, and then has to apply to his or her own local polyclinic and then get registered and then wait for the special crew to come and get tested, which takes time for sure, at least minimum 2 or 3 days.
Right.
But in some areas, for example, in capital city is short, but in the local areas, remote areas, it's still difficult. And I would like to say now it's like extreme cold in Uzbekistan, so which makes it even hard to get the people tested in the regions especially.
Right. Winter is kind of everybody was worried about the winter. I mean, in winter, people just stay at home, and staying home is, or gathering at home in large number, is one of the reasons how these things spread. Bruce, talking about reporting, it's good news that the way our colleagues from Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan and Brno was explaining, I mean, there are at least testings are available in sufficient number, whoever wants to take it, they have access to it, although there are issues with the reporting of those cases. But speaking of reporting, in Central Asia, there is also a country which still remains in denial about even the existence of this infection in the country, Turkmenistan, the country I'm talking about. How has Turkmenistan been handling this throughout the year? You know, we had a number of conversation about Turkmenistan and the region about this. I mean, in the way the country has handled this, what does it tell you about what might be happening there, what might be the next there?
You know, judging by the reporting of Azadlik, our Turkmen service and others, Turkmen News and other sources too, you'd have to say that it's really, really bad, which makes it all the more incomprehensible that the government continues to maintain that story, of course, that doesn't even exist in the country, even though, you know, they're forcing the people to take all the same precautions that people in countries that have admitted they do have the virus, and that's practically every other country in the world, really. You know, but the same thing. So you have to have a masks. You know, they're trying to get the vaccine, and they're saying that everyone has to get vaccinated when they get that. You know, so they're taking some measures, you know, visible measures that seem to indicate it's a problem. And of course, you know, we've heard that again from these other sources that, in fact, you know, that it's out of control in some places. The hospitals are packed, they're overfilled. Some people don't even bother going to the hospital even if they think they got it, because they know, well, there's two things. One, they know that they probably won't even get in, and two, if they do get in, there might not be anything that anyone can do for them once they get there. So, you know, obviously it's a horrible situation, you know, and really, since we don't have anyone from Tajikistan, I should mention that it's not a whole lot better. It's strange how that to try to figure out how widespread it is in Tajikistan and Turkmenistan, you kind of have to look at its neighboring countries. So, you know, we know that it's in Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Uzbekistan because the governments of all three of those countries have admitted that it's there. So it's just natural to assume that it is everywhere in Central Asia. Tajikistan, for instance, says that it has only registered a little more than 13,000 cases of coronavirus. Now, the population of Tajikistan is roughly half the size of Kazakhstan, right? Kazakhstan's got a little more than 18 million. Tajikistan has like 9.5 million. But as we just heard, you know, from Galkar, they've registered 160,000 cases in Kazakhstan. And yet in Tajikistan, they have 13,000. That's not even a tenth of the amount that they have in Kazakhstan. So you got to look and go, where are you getting these numbers from? You know, and like I said, Turkmenistan's taking it to the most absurd lengths where it just says that they don't have it, even though there's this scandal with the Turkish diplomat who died, and Turkish doctors back home are saying, but looking at his x-rays, saying he certainly died of coronavirus, COVID-19. But he wasn't even allowed to leave Turkmenistan to get treatment in Turkey. And of course, all the doctors in Turkmenistan said no. You know, it was a heart respiratory problem and heart condition, you know, that led to his death. So, you know, it's probably the worst response to the crisis anywhere in the world is what's happening in Turkmenistan.
Yeah, as we discussed numerous times in the past, Bruce, I guess they stick with their narrative despite evidences contrary to their position. Also, colleagues, just wanting to remind you that whenever you want to say something, respond to a comment, please jump in without me inviting you. news. So it's always better to have a free-floating conversation. One more point about numbers, though. The country, Bruce, where you are, the Czech Republic. So what's the population of that? Like 11 million people now. So I was just checking the updated numbers today in preparation to this conversation. Number of cases there are over 776,000 in a small country. And today was the worst day in terms of the new cases from the beginning of the pandemic. You know, when you look into numbers provided by the authorities in Central Asia and in zero case in the case of Turkmenistan, you know, it's compared to the rest of the world, it's just unbelievable the way they are treating this this pandemic. So, you know, despite all these, it seems that there is some success to be talked about, and a lot yet remain to be fixed. This is how Central Asia is entering to the new year with the pandemic. So what does their performance from last year tell us about how they are going to handle this going forward as the world is grappling with the virus? Also, among many depressing news, there's a hope. The vaccine is coming out. What's the recovery plan of Central Asia? What are they talking about? With whom are they working with to get out of the situation? Let's continue the conversation talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Dr. Ermek Ismailov, general surgeon and urgent care therapist at the State Institution Clinical Hospital of the Administrative Department of the President of Kyrgyz Republic, Dr. Gohar Merganova, public health specialist, joining us from Kazakhstan, Barno Anwar, a senior journalist with Radio Free Europe Liberty's Uzbek service, Ozotlik, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlog Awazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast and Radio Free Europe Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the COVID-19 in Central Asia. So before even talking about the future, I like to highlight the fact that how people or the civil society was jumping in throughout the year in the region to fill the need, which authorities have been failing in some cases to deal with. Dr. Ermek, your project is such a good example of this. Tell us about it, the Telegram project that you were telling me earlier. What was that and what kind of need it was filling?
If I say about my Telegram channel, we opened it with our colleagues in March 2020 years, and our functional in this Telegram channel, we have 30 doctors from another specialties, for example, genetologist, ENT doctor, and another doctors who answered in the first wave the questions who have some symptoms. For example, if the people have fever or cough, we answer the questions and help, because we did this role because in the first wave many doctors was didn't available. That's why in the Telegram channel more doctors who stay at home, they are try to help for our people. In the Telegram channel, first we have 200 people. When we have first wave peak, in the Telegram channel sit 15,000 people and take consultation from our doctors.
Very, very genius. And earlier we had another doctor from Kyrgyzstan joining our show, Dr. Medelbekov, I guess his last name. So he also had a virtual clinic called High Doctor, mainly responding to people's question and concerns about the COVID-19. Very genius and timely initiatives. Any examples from the rest of the region about such?
I would like to add the same experience from Uzbekistan. Mm-hmm. They opened the Telegram channel right in the beginning of June, which called online doctors, and the doctors put their numbers, Telegram numbers, WhatsApp numbers, whatever, and they were ready and available online to give a consultation to the patients. That really greatly worked, where official workers were not enough in the hospitals, where they ran out the rooms and medical supports and etc. That was great help, and we covered that issue.
Yeah, and there were lots of heroic examples from many parts in Central Asia where civil society activists were jumping in to play the role, which mm-hmm. is usually the responsibilities of the authorities. Bruce, you know, as Berno was explaining, you know, the authorities are still trying to find ways to hide this or to push it under the carpet. At the same time, the world is kind of faced with the second wave or the more the deadliest version of the virus. So we are nowhere close to the end of the road here. So in these kind of circumstances, how do you see, is the region ready to handle what might be on the horizon going forward?
Well, I mean, I think you'd have to say that they're more prepared to deal with it than they were when this started, you know, at the beginning of 2020. So certainly I think everyone's learned something about how you deal with this and try to control the spread of it. You know, that said, Anmek was talking at the start that the cases are coming down in Kyrgyzstan. And that is also seems to be true in Kazakhstan, too. And of course, those are the two countries that are providing the most reliable information, not reliable information, but the most reliable that you're getting out of any of the five countries anyway. And it also shows like a slow decrease, you know, that because I've been watching this too over the course of the year and certainly over the course of the last few weeks. And it is going down. I mean, it's steady, you know, which could indicate Bruce, that we've reached a plateau.
Can I say something there? I mean, how we can really say that it's going down while throughout the world it is going up? I mean, what they have done right? What makes us believe that it's going down?
I don't think what they've done right is the proper way to phrase the question exactly. Mm-hmm. They had, you know, the first wave was pretty bad. The second wave was really hard in a lot of places. So I don't know, but it's possible that there's been just widespread exposure to this already, you know, that a significant percentage of the people have already been exposed to this, you know, and we heard Gohar say earlier that some people don't ever exhibit any symptoms and some people have very mild symptoms. And it could be, it's possible that most people have got it, have had it already, you know, out there, and that there's not, you know, they built up some kind of immunity to it. Whereas, you know, we had, even in the West, like the Czech Republic, we have lockdowns and then they ease them up, you know, and then the first lockdown was at the start of March. And then every time they ease the lockdowns, you were talking about, well, we got a spike in cases. Well, we also just had the Christmas and New Year's holidays, right? So everyone was told to stay home and they did. And then all of a sudden there was these holidays and they went out. You know, and that's a story around the world. But I just think the exposure has been greater in Central Asia.
Yeah, I agree with Bruce. I would like to just add something. For example, you know, at the end of October, August, September and October, there was a really high amount of the patients because we've got the videotapes, for example, from Zangiota Hospital. In a short videotape, 20 seconds, and it shows more than 20 ambulances is waiting for to be accepted for the hospital, and some of them are waiting for 3 or 4 hours right in the hospital, which is the main big hospital in the country, which has more than 4,000. At that time, I guess, more than 4,000 beds for the patient. It's full of the COVID-19 patients. That was a really great big wave. And regarding the waves in the country, many doctors, they have a different idea. For example, some doctors believe that we had only one big wave. It's end of the summer and the beginning of the fall. And some of them believe that we had already two waves, like in Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, one in the June and July, and then in the fall. But regarding the horizon, as you asked from Bruce, now people in the country seems very relaxed. For example, we have reports, and then we have listeners who are talking to us that people are not having the masks, or they're dropping their mask to their jaw. And the bazaars, as you may know, that there is no even chance to social distancing. So there is no social distance, no masks. And our bazaars in Central Asia are usually connected to the closed ones, closed areas. So without mask, they're walking in. Now many social health workers are writing to us that they're very worried about the coming big second or third wave of coronavirus. They're watching to Europe. There is a new spike of COVID-19. And then if that comes to the country, the most probably will come, I guess, then there is a call. There is no strict control over COVID regulations. And then lack of resources, governmental resources, the financial resources, health workers are very tired. Now we are experiencing big energy crisis and what's going to happen to hospitals which don't have a stable energy supply, don't have stable gas, for example, how they will simply heat the hospitals. And they're asking us, they're urging us, the health workers, that we have to write about that government should strict the control again. At least the mask and social distancing should be in place. And we have an official statement, for example, from 4th of January, if I'm not wrong, that the airline border is open, but they're making two tests. For example, passengers not allowed without the PCR negative test. So they're having PCR negative test, and while they're entering the country at the border, they will have another rapid test. So they get tested two times. So of course there are some claims that they have to be tested for their own expense, but the government trying to control to the coming of the new spike of the virus, I think, this way.
Yeah, so this was Barno talking about Uzbekistan. So Dr. Irmak and Dr. Gohar, as Barno was saying, bazaars in your countries are no different than Uzbekistan's, where according to Barno, people have already started taking it easy. Now, in the light of what you were saying earlier, that the cases are dropping in your respective countries, how is this affecting the attitude of people towards COVID-19? I mean, are you seeing more and more maskless people, crowded areas? Just to be honest, you know, people are getting fatigued, and due to the lack of proper government support, I guess many of them have to go out and do something to put the food on the table. So tell us, please, about the general attitude of the people in your countries about COVID-19. How is it, and how is it changing?
Yeah, actually, I can say that we have decline of cases. We still have kind of, it's not getting bigger drastically, but it still kind of increases, you know, slightly, but it's not like it's stable increase, but it's still increase. So, but, you know, government kind of explained to the population that we have this system of monitoring, you know, these zones. And like every day that we have a source of a governmental source that, you know, kind of announce which region in what zone. So if any zone goes to red zone, then that means that restriction measures will be increased.
But you will know about that when the virus has already spread. I mean, what I have in mind when I ask this question, how the people are responding to it, is like on Sunday you are going to have an election. Election is usually the time when there are big rallies are held, people come together, and social distancing are kind of pushed into the back seat. I mean, when you look into those political rallies, as a doctor, how do you see it? What goes through your mind?
Yeah, it's very, from one side, it's very important in that they kind of, you know, it's for the first time they organized it relatively well in terms of dates, because, you know, it's scheduled elections. But, you know, I understand that, you know, in the conditions of epidemics, it can kind of increase, you know, the spread of the infection. But also they kind of, they publish in press that they are going to apply all measures to prevent increase of infection spread.
Are they applying those measures?
So it might be not enough, but it seems like if people wear masks, this infection can be controlled. But I mean, if these measures will not be followed very well, then we can see increase of cases.
Do you see they are following it?
Excuse me?
Do you see those measures that you are talking about, are they followed in those rallies, in those gatherings?
To be honest, I have to say that after peak of infection in during summertime, it was, you know, huge. It was devastating. So people understood that they have to, this infection exists. But still, yes, we have this conspirology thinking in our population. But, you know, currently, like, people are more prone to mask wearing. They wear masks. Of course, it's not perfect everywhere. You know, they wait improperly sometimes. They use the same mask, you know, like through weeks, through months. I don't know. Like, sometimes it seems like they don't change it. But in overall, you know, it's a rule everywhere to wear masks, at least in closed spaces. So it seems like people just, you know, follow this rule. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the quality, of course, it's a big question because it's really hard to control how they wear and what they wear.
Okay.
That's the problem, yes.
Mm-hmm. We also need to be wrapping up the discussion very soon. Again, the same event is taking place in Kyrgyzstan this Sunday, Dr. Ermek. So when you look into those events, the way it's taking place, what goes through your mind?
About election, yes?
Yes, election-related activities.
If I say about at the moment what reaction from healthcare system, they are said the people want to wear masks and use sanitizers. I think in the time when we go to election, people will be follow this rule. But after the election, I think we go to the same life, and people when go to the home, I think they are not didn't will be follow these rules.
Okay. Yeah, we need to really wrap up the discussion. But you know, case of Turkmenistan, Bruce, something needs to be done there, right? It's not funny, really, but it's kind of irresponsible, a tragedy, the way the authorities are handling this at the time when we are talking about the second wave or the third wave or more deadliest version or the infectious version of a pandemic emerging in different parts of the world. Last year, we had the World Health Organization's delegation visiting Turkmenistan. I guess nothing really tangible came out from there. I mean, as we are talking about the future-looking scenarios, what can be done about this place? What are the options? What are the tools?
Well, apparently nothing, as far as I can tell. Like I said, I don't think anyone believes that there's no coronavirus in Turkmenistan. There must surely be government officials there who know that the virus is there, but they're still willing to say that it's not there. You can't force medical help on people. But, I mean, there's a good point there that you said it's irresponsible. Yes, because, you know, first of all, the people of Turkmenistan are suffering from this hugely, because their government really doesn't seem to be, it's making the efforts that it can to combat it without talking about it, but it's not bringing in, as far as we can tell, it's not bringing in medicines and new equipment and working like crazy, like in the other countries, to build new hospitals so that they have more beds and can treat this or anything. None of that's really being done in Turkmenistan. And I think eventually it'll become apparent to the neighbors that as much as they're trying to control it in their own countries, if there's a country right next to them where they're not doing very much to control it, that's always going to be a source of contagion. So it'll be interesting to see how long it is once in Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan and Iran, they start to get control of this. If they don't actually call the people in Ashgabat and say, you know, if we get another wave because you guys haven't taken the right precautions, we're going to have problems in relations. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's tough. And also there's a hope, you know, in the pipeline. Like we have several vaccines already available. They are being vaccinated, I mean, in the health sector to health professionals in countries like the United States, and a number of Europeans have already started that. I guess China is doing its own thing. So kind of final question. I mean, is there any kind of a proper infrastructure? Let me put it this way, Dr. Ermek. Are you comfortable that your country has the proper infrastructure in place to handle the next phase, which is the vaccination phase in the country? I mean, are they working with any country to obtain this vaccine first? And what are the plans to vaccinate people there?
I read the last news about vaccines in our country, and our government, they are working with Russian vaccines about Sputnik V. But I think it's early to take this vaccine because we have some question about effective about Sputnik V. I think we should wait about Pfizer vaccines because I read that they have effective 95%. But I have also have question about when these Pfizer vaccines came to Kyrgyzstan and we can vaccinate it to people.
Are the authorities talking with the Pfizer?
I hear that they are discussing about this, to take this vaccine, but I think it's we need to time to take this vaccine. I think it will be take 6 months or 1 year. It's too long.
What about, who's that? Go ahead, you? Yeah, go ahead.
I just was I just wanted to say that Pfizer vaccine is very good, very effective vaccine, but you know it requires a very complicated transportation chain. You know, minus 80 degree. It's really complicated to provide these conditions to transport and sustain. You know, this temperature regimen in. You know. I'm just afraid in our countries it would be really hard to sustain this temperature and to deliver this vaccine to the population, you know, in a good condition that would cause, you know, good immunity. I think Moderna might be better option, but even if we can't get Moderna or Pfizer, we can use Sputnik or AstraZeneca, because we know that they didn't publish results of third stage of clinical trials, but at least more than 60% efficacy, and taking into account that, you know, Pfizer kind of priority of Pfizer is US and the population of the country, I don't think we will be able to get this. And also I'm not sure if we have good infrastructure to transport and handle it properly in our countries.
What the authorities in your country is talking about? What are the thinking there? What are the plans that they are talking about in terms of the vaccines?
They are thinking about Sputnik. We also have our own vaccine that is entering third stage of clinical trials, but I don't know. I didn't see published papers on, you know, even a second phase of the trial. But I hope probably it will be good with good efficacy. We'll see. But it will, you know, results will be only in March. But they plan to start production of Sputnik vaccine in Karaganda, and they plan to start vaccination of older population in the end of February.
Have you heard anything from people, like what are their response to possible vaccination, how they look into being vaccinated? Is there, I mean, when I ask this question, I also have like people like in a country where I am in the United States, lots of people are not really there yet to be vaccinated. I mean, they have questions, they have their own concerns. How's the reaction there in Kazakhstan in case if those vaccines becomes available? Will they take it?
Actually, this is a very important question, because I think all our governments have to pay attention to the attitude of our population to these vaccines, because I think our population is not ready to vaccination. But is the
What do you hear from them?
Majority of people, I think, would be cautious to get this vaccine, and I think it's not enough information and the kind of, you know, educational information about safety of these vaccines, efficacy, you know, risks of side effects and risks of consequences of coronavirus. So our population is not ready. I don't think that it's a big question. I think it's the main question at this stage, because people, it's understandable, it's really natural, because those vaccines were developed in very short time. And also, you know, like regarding Sputnik, we have a lot of questions, because, you know, scientists, they didn't publish properly results of the third stage of the clinical trial.
Right.
About Pfizer, we know that it's, you know, very complicated to transport and handle. You have to, you know, to keep this temperature, and we know how it can be easily spoiled, in real life situation. It's not ideal. And also, these are two doses of the vaccine, so you have to do it very carefully. So it's a lot of questions.
Right.
And
we need to wrap up the discussion. You know, I'm kind of surprised that no one is really talking about the Chinese vaccine. I guess they also have a vaccine there. I mean, I guess that's kind of out of question for Central Asian authorities. I don't know.
I would like to add, for Uzbekistan, exactly the Chinese vaccine is really in the case, because now they're having third phase of the trials in the country. And then the authorities told the first time that they would go to the trial with the Chinese vaccine. And then in September, they officially announced that they started to work regarding the trials with the Russian Sputnik V vaccine. And we've got the official statement that Uzbekistan already ordered for 35 million doses of vaccine to Russia. And then there was an opinion, wide opinion, that maybe Uzbekistan only go with the Russian vaccination, which has a lot of questions about, as our colleague from Kazakhstan told, regarding the efficiency. But then there were official statement after our investigation that they're trying really Chinese and Russian. So far, we didn't hear anything officially from the other vaccinations, but as we know, the already 300 doses from Russian vaccine is under the trial in the country, and the Chinese one. Probably our country will go with these two vaccines, but we don't know exactly what's going to be officially announced later on the day.
Okay. I think let's end this conversation, Bruce, with your kind of final conclusive remarks. So as Central Asia is dealing with this situation in its efforts to come out from this situation, where your eyes will be, what you will be looking at as they enter to this third wave or the vaccination stage, what are the areas you will be watching at?
Well, one, you know, obviously to look and see if there is a third wave that comes, you know, and again, there's some questionable numbers, but to watch that, and you know, and then two, as we just heard, I think one of the big questions, certainly for Central Asia and for a lot of parts of the world, is when you do get a reliable vaccine, how long will it be until it actually shows up in your country and is widely available? You know, we tend to look at this through the prism, you're in America and I'm in Europe, you know, and they have everyone says, well, you know, it's coming in the next few months, certainly, you know, by autumn or something at the latest. But in some parts, you know, like in places in Central Asia, that might not be true. You know, it might be a year before they start to be able to just, you know, inoculate on a widespread basis. You know, so I'll be watching to see how fast they can get some of these vaccines. You know, and as we heard already, you know, from Gohar, you know, vaccines that they can afford, and that they can transport and keep in their own facilities before distributing it to the public.
Right, right. Yeah, lots of questions, and we will keep watching how it goes. And I guess today we were mainly focused on health-wise on this show, but there are also economic implications that authorities need to be taken care of as a result of these restrictions, the COVID-related situation. Maybe we will come to that topic in some other time. With this, thank you very much, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. Also, big thanks goes to Dr. Irmik Smilov, General Surgeon and Urgent Care Therapist at the State Institution Clinical Hospital of the Administrative Department of the President of the Kyrgyz Republic, Dr. Gohar Merganova, Public Health Specialist, and Barno Anwar, a Senior Journalist with Radio Free Europe Liberty's Uzbek Service, Ozotlik. Again, thank you. Thank you very much for your time in touch today. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.